Good morning and welcome to Fun with the Drive Type Model Binder and MVC Contrib. My name is Steve Aber, and I'll be your presenter this morning. This is actually a re-recording of the initial presentation. Due to some technical difficulties, I didn't get into the presentation until about 10, a little more than 10 minutes late, and I wanted to go back, hit some items that I glossed over before, addressing some of the questions that were sent back, and take another path through this. So, as I mentioned, my name is Steve Aber. I am a recent contributor. I've been contributing to open source projects for quite some time, and I'm a recent contributor to AutoFact Contrib, the MVC Contrib project, along with AlbaCore under the Rake Build system and some others. So, this is has been Drive Type Model Binder has been a particularly fun one, especially as I've been working in the MVC space. So, to jump into the presentation and the Drive Type Model Binder, why would you use it? In particular, we can model bind types that vary on a common base. So, when MVC is great at rendering concrete types out and gives a lot of flexibility, and especially as we went from MVC 1 to 2, moved into editor templates, display templates, and so on, gave that concrete type discoverability to MVC, and it also, but it also left a bit of a hole in that it doesn't handle model binding back to those concrete types if you're rendering on a more generic type, such as an interface or an abstract base. And the reason it doesn't is because it simply doesn't know about them. MVC, by its nature, is very simple, very clean in terms of the content that it's putting out to the page, and isn't automatically throwing a lot of extra data. And so in turn, you simply aren't putting that data there without explicitly stating it. So Drive Type Model Binder takes an approach to that, and we'll go over that in just a moment. So, in the course of looking at this in the presentation, we'll take a look at how we render and model bind these types. Start with a problem that's broken, if you will, trying to render over a common interface, and unable to bind those types back. We'll then take a look at view model injection to a base interface and why you would do it, how it would be used, things like that. And then we'll take a look at various IOC approaches, not only to the view models, but also to the views, and in particular, and what's been done in this project. So, some fun stuff to take a look at and get into, and hopefully some things that you can pick up some ideas from, or send me ideas back as well. That would be great. So the Drive Type Model Binder, it's a short history of it. In October of 2009, had a business need. We wanted to render and bind derived types. In particular, the reason for the use of the bind types was that we were rendering information about a pricing model to financial instruments. And if you've worked with financial instruments, you'll know that the pricing models are extremely varied, and the parameters that you use to decide on how you price one instrument versus another can be very different. So we needed to come up with something very flexible and yet clear-cut from a concrete implementation, but flexible enough from a general implementation so that we could grow the model, change the model over time without it being brittle. And that's where we needed the ability to do it. So by December of 2009, I rolled the first implementation into MVC Contrib. During that time, there was quite a bit of work that went back and forth in the open source space. So on the Microsoft site, I originally grabbed the MVC2 source code and grabbed the default model binder, took that code, started looking at it, pulled it apart, developed a closure around that code so I could understand, an FX cop style closure, that is, a closure that I could work with and get it running, and then started asking questions. How should I really be piecing this together? And by posting questions to the MVC board, the ASP.NET MVC board at Microsoft, a number of people from the ASP.NET MVC team chimed in, and the result of that was reducing that code from a little over 200 lines of code down to just under 20. So, and as a side benefit, when we moved from MVC 2 to MVC 3, It was literally a recompile. So really a testament to the design and a testament to being able to work with those folks that they jump on and answer questions and can get you understanding the models that they're programming around pretty quickly. And so it was nice to do that. And then also worked with the MVC Contrib team, in particular Jeremy Skinner and Eric Hexter, on how to implement, on how to get it bound into the MVC Contrib project, and working with that. It was really a lot of fun, and like I said, it's a testament to the open source community on the Microsoft side. Really awesome to see it coming together, and MVC Conf is another result of that. So when we look at that, after December 2009, we were really integrated with MVC 1/2 capabilities. In fact, we were focusing on the render partial, the partials implementation in MVC Contrib. That partial, those partials in MVC Contrib at the time were the only way to hold contextual binding information. The default MVC partials in 1 and 2 don't pay attention to that. Now, in MVC 2, they introduced the editor templates and the other display templates, but in particular, the editor templates are hold contextual data, so they hold the binding path, especially when you're rendering a deep object graph, and that was key. So the implementation didn't not support MVC2's editor templates, but it was really focused around the partials. So in the update to MVC3 that came in December of 2010, focused on a couple of things. One is just focusing our, we moved off the old MVC Contrib partials, entirely focused on the editor templates, and then also looked at speed and security. Speed from the standpoint of how quickly we can identify the identifier, that the code that needs to go on the page, and then how we identify the type that needs to be instantiated back. From a security standpoint, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it's basically what we render on the page, and we'll get into more details. And simplicity. This is the least of them. Pulled together two functions that had to be done on wire up, pulled it into one. So just wanted to continue cleaning it up and keep it moving. So if we, as we move into our application and sample code, kind of set the stage a little bit. So we're going to pretend that we are a furniture manufacturer and reseller. And in fact, we're going to have a, on our website, we're going to expose an order, an ordering process. So you can go to the page and say, I want to add an item to my order. And hence, I have an order item. So I have a list of order items. These are concrete types. There's nothing fancy, no variations going on here. So nothing we really have to do about them. However, when we look at this, we have configurable items, a collection of configurable items. That's a collection of the iConfigurable item interface. It's actually an iEnumerable. So we don't have a concrete implementation, but we have left stranded out here is a couple of concrete types, a kitchen table and a kitchen chair. So again, this is a simplified example, but gives us a deep object graph that we're going to drop in and render and show the scenario that we want to deal with. And as we move along, we'll talk about how we're implementing it and running here. So as we switch over to code, we can take a look at it. Here's my kitchen table, CSHTML. Here is my kitchen chair, CSHTML. And I can see that I'm actually binding this information out. So these are the particulars of that. If I look at my Solution Explorer, drop down to the view, I can see that my order item is where I'm varying on. This is where I have my iEnumerable of iConfigurable item. So this is what we're rendering, and we'll see the typical problem that if you've ever tried to do this in MVC, you'll be very familiar with the problem. And as we pull up our page, we see the standard MVC3 form, MVC3 application. And here we have our catalog. This is showing us a furniture piece. We add a link that says we're going to add this into our order such that we can configure the items. So we're adding this set in, and it's showing us, here we have the table, the dining room table, and the chairs that make up this order. So we'll say, give me a table, give me a chestnut on the wood, give me chestnut on the wood for the chairs, and oh, we want 5 of them. So when we submit this, we're actually getting an error, cannot create an instance of an interface. So MVC comes back, says, I need to create an iConfigurable item. Well, I can't instantiate it, and that's the problem. So how do we change this? Now, we'll go in and we'll mark up the code so we have everything set. Before we do that, I want to jump in here and take a look at the order item. The actual configuration of these items that we're seeing on the screen. In any sample application, you know, we take some shortcuts to get our data out there. I want to show you exactly what that is, and that there are some shortcuts, but it's not too great. So in our application start in Global ASAX, we're doing IOC registration, building that up. We're actually then loading data into our repository. This is an autofacism in terms of saying, let's create this application, let's create the scope, and then we're going to dispose of it when we're all done. We set up our resolver for MVC3. This is the MVC3 particular, and then we register areas and move on. So let's jump into here, and we're going to go in and say, okay, let's go into data load, and now we can see what's going on. So we're injecting in to data load an iRepository. Jump into that in just a second. But what we're doing with that repository is that we're adding wood types, upholstery type, base types. We're also adding a simple order, and that's this order ID. It's a const, and we're saying it's an order ID of 100. So what we're doing is saying, when I'm loaded up into this page, rather than simulating running an order system that's holding the state of the order that moves across the system, we're just going to go with one single order. So simplifying that for the sake of the demonstration. The next thing we do is we call load orderable parts. This would be a routine where we're loading the catalog of available items. So here we would have tables, dining room sets, so on and so forth, and then underneath those having the individual components that make them, the individual orderable components that make those up. So we have that here, it adds it to the repository and then saves all of those to the repository. Now, in particular, we're using RavenDB to do this, going after that. So we'll see that iRepository is very simple. It gives us some functionality to return single items, all items, delete items, add items, and save items. It's dependent on this document model, which is right here. It just says we need to have an ID that's readable and writable. And then we have a repository. This is actually calling out to the document session exposed by Raven. So this is where we're actually wiring up the mechanics for that. And then finally, we're going to go into the document store factory, and we're going to see the embeddable data document store. This is the Raven store. It's actually we're running it in memory, so we're not saving anything to disk. It gives us kind of some quick flexibility to spin this up, get it running, and return it. And then the way we're wiring this into IOC comes up right here. For some reason my keystroke isn't working. Let's jump in here. Okay, here we go. So we're going to create a single instance of the document store itself. The document store is going to be one instance for the application. We can then provide sessions. That's an instance per lifetime. Lifetime being defined as the HTTP request. When the HTTP request comes in, a lifetime is defined. When we go back to the user and return to the user, it goes out of scope. And so this is giving us the I dispose on any objects that have been created during that lifetime. And then let's see, we're doing the same thing for the iRepository itself. Then we're also doing the data load, which is what we talked about, and then some other things that are supporting the application, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So now that we've talked about that, let's talk about those pages that we need to get up and running. And in particular, we want to look at the kitchen chair and kitchen table. So when we look at the kitchen chair and kitchen table, we have a couple things to do. And actually, before we jump into those, we're going to go back into our global ASAX. And under the global ASAX, what we first want to do is tell the derived type model binder, and in particular, we want to tell the derived type model binder and MVC both that we are going to have some variation on types, and this is all done through the registration with the MVC contrib derived type model binder cache. So the cache is where we describe these, and then we're going to say type of iConfigurable item, and we're going to hand it an array of types, and we're going to say type of kitchen chair and type of kitchen table, and there we go. So at that point, we have that single command tells the derived type model binder that we're having a variation on iConfigurable item that should point us to kitchen chair and kitchen table, and in turn also makes MVC3 aware of that. So let's save that, and we'll jump into the kitchen table. And on the kitchen table and kitchen chair, what we're going to do is two things. We're going to add a using statement into MVC contrib. Now this could easily, and for running projects that I'm using this on, we simply put that into the web.config and it's set to go there. Now what we can do is throw that in there, HTML, and then we want to call out to HTML.typestamp, which is an extension method on HTML. And this can be placed anywhere, top, bottom, inside the field set, outside the field set, doesn't matter. The derived type model, derived type model binder, when it searches for that, it's just like any other field, can be anywhere on the page. So I'm just putting it here because it happens to be around the hiddens. I suppose if I were being ultra picky, you know, let's move it there so things are at least grouped. So let's drop into kitchen chair, and we'll do the same thing. So we're going to say, let's give it the using statement that we had there, and pull that up. And then let's drop the HTML typestamp so we can describe to it, hey, we've got some code that we actually want to run. And just for purposes, let's put it down there just to prove that to you. Now when we run this, this is going to come up and give us the page. As we look at this, the rendering is going to be is going to take us back to a page that doesn't give us a great deal of information, but we'll refine that in a minute. But in the meantime, I can show you what's going on. So let's say that we go down here, we add to the order, we're going to add an item into that order. And once we have the item, we can see that we have the table, and we're going to order one table, change that to chestnut, change that to chestnut, and we'll change this to 5 chairs instead of just 1-4. So we submit this. Now what's going to happen is we're going to come back to this page. If I add another item, add another table to this chair, I'm going to see that they're chestnut. I've got one item and 5 items here. I've now got a whole new item that was added by virtue of this second action, and so I can continue adding to this. So that's kind of the fun with this. We're seeing it kind of come together. But let's make this a little more useful, that it shows us a separate page that actually renders that renders for us and adds some views. So in particular, I'm going to update our source code rather than have you watch me make all of these changes. I'm going to pull these up and just tell you about them real quickly. So if we look at the solution items, of the Solution Explorer, we can see that we've got the a set of new views going on here. In particular, we've now added under Catalog some display templates. And what we're doing is we've added a review step. So the review just does a display four of these. If we look back at the controllers and look at the catalog controller, what we're going to do now is we're configuring, which is what we're doing. We're going to come in and save, and then we're going to redirect to the review stage so that we can actually have a viewable representation of this. So we'll just jump back in and show you how this is working. And once we have this, we're going to bring this in. We're going to add to the order. We'll make our changes. I also added an indication of the ID that we're using here. So we'll change this one to oak and make this a pedestal. We'll change this to denim and make it oak as well. And make this 5. And we'll submit it. Alright, so we've got a quantity there, and wood and upholstery, we've got those set, and we've now model bound that. Now if we jump back in here, we add another order, we do 9 and 99, leather, chestnut, curtain. Oh, I actually changed the first ones. Well, that's okay. Let's have it work. So let's order 1,000 and 4,000 of these. And we should see that in our review that it comes up. So we've got 9 and 99, 1,000 and 4,000. We've got all the IDs that came back correctly. So when you look at the use of Raven in this, if you were to dig into that, I'm not pretending that this is an ideal implementation of it, just really from a review standpoint, but it has been handy in pulling this together and getting this up and running quickly. So the last thing that I want to take a look at is, the next thing that I want to take a look at is talk a little bit about the model binding and how that's working. In particular, the view model binding, and how we're doing that. So if we look at the view model in our implementation, I'm going to go down under models, and then we'll come back to the controller because it'll start to make a little more sense if we go in that direction. So you'll notice that we have an iSimple order view model, and that has a couple of functions, just three methods saying a get and set on the order object. We want an add SKU, so we say, given an item, let's add this thing into the order object. So that's how we're getting our order items added. And then there's a save method. So very simple from that standpoint. Then we're calling in and saying, here's the actual implementation of it. So you'll notice that we're injecting iRepository. The reason we're injecting iRepository into our view model is it's an opinionated approach. So I think that's the best way to put it. In particular, we don't want to bleed the knowledge of how to save and retrieve an object inside our controller. It's not the controller's job. We want to push that into the view model. We may even, in an implementation, push it further out into the actual domain objects that are going on with respect to it. But the view model and the controller in and of itself should not know how to save it. And that's the reason for the refactor here, and I wanted to show that. Now, there are two ways that we can instantiate it. One is with a repository. The other is with an ID and the repository. So this is the order ID and the repository, and what it's doing is reaching into the repository and providing it. You'll see the mechanics around adding a SKU and saving. Like I said, I don't pretend to be a Raven genius. I've only picked this up in order to pull together this presentation, so I'm sure I'm misusing it. It's worked well from that standpoint. But the key points here are not Raven. In particular, they're talking about how we inject these and why these two different models appear. So if I go back to my controller, you'll notice that I'm injecting the catalog controller is not injecting an instance, but rather a function. And what it's doing with the function is actually saying, give me my, given an integer, an order ID, return back a view model that's associated with it. So whenever I ask this view model factory for something, I get it back. So why would I do that? Well, there are cases here, such as the index function and the review function, the configure function, where if I had a view model that was being injected here, it's not going to be used. And worse than that, it's going to be in an indeterminate state because it doesn't know what order I'm working on. So we start playing with objects that have an indeterminate state and would rather stay away from those. So this is a way of telling the, at its very heart, I want to create something at some point in the future to IOC that is going to take an integer. Now, I could give a more descriptive delegate with the actual member name that's part of the signature and pass it in, but I'm just using the shorthand form of this. So and what the IOC, in terms of dependency injection, the IOC container is saying, I'm going to give you a closure into the IOC container that will provide this when you ask for it. So it's a very slick piece of functionality when you look at it. So our index is just showing our page, rendering our basic page, but it isn't until we get into here. So we come in, somebody has clicked the page, and it actually shows them, and if we... as we run that, show that in just a second, it gives the URL and it says, give me a configuration with this new item that's being added. So in turn it says, let's pull up that order ID that the system is running with. So that common order ID that we talked about, adding the SKU number is the ID that's being passed here, and then returning the view model. And then we've got the ability to say, we've got the order, we've added to it, we've rendered it, exactly what we need. Now the next piece is that we say, I also, when I hit submit on that page and the page posts back to the server, I'm coming back into this method and I'm using it a little different way. I'm using just the iSimpleOrderView model, and that's the alternate constructor. If you remember on this, we had an alternate constructor that just took the repository, so that's the one that's being used here. And the model binder is providing all of the properties that are on here. So the order property in particular is the only one that's going on right now. So when we look at this, that's a different way to present it. So in this case, in configure, rather than having this view model spun up, and again, this func, which is a factory, in this case, we only have one view model. We don't have two view models floating around. This keeps it real simple. So within the scope of this function, it's pretty straightforward. When we pull this in, and then we look at the review of, we look at the operation of this, you'll notice that we have a simple order view model and an iSimple order view model. So how are we describing that? That's not the role of the derived type model binder. It's a little different role. And when we look at this, in particular, we want to look at the binders. I almost forgot where this was for a second, but got it. So the binders, the IOC model binder right here, is deriving from the default model binder. And the default model binder is just the standard override, going to the dependency resolver in MVC3, saying give me the service. If it's not equal to null, return it. Otherwise, we throw an argument exception, giving the type name. So it's a very simple, about the simplest implementation of the IOC model binder that you'll find. In MVC2, this was some serious gymnastics. MVC3 has has simplified that a great deal. So then if we take a look at the IOC extensions, here's where it's fun. What we're doing is saying a couple of ways that we could do it. We could say, if I didn't want to register an interface and go through that trouble, I could just give it the implementing, the concrete type. However, if we said I've got a concrete type and a derived type, and I'm pulling it in, I'm going to register, I'm going to add a binder to the base type that says I'm going to have an IOC model binder to that same base type. I'm then going to register the concrete type to the base type with, in this case, this is an AutoFac mechanism. So if we look at where we're using this, in particular, in the model module, we're saying register the injected model, simple order view model to iSimple order view model, and then it's doing those multiple steps of registering the binder, registering the type, and it's done. So that's what's giving us the ability to bind, and fairly useful, especially when you want to drive that order testability. So what does that mean at the end of the day? Really comes down to how we're testing that the class, and when we look at the catalog controller, I just added back some unit test code into the project, and when we look at the unit test and the controller, so first we'll bring up the catalog controller. We see this, we're running against a view, and then we look at the catalog controller tests. What you're seeing here is we're using mock or mock you, MOQ for short. That is, that reference is right here. I'm pulling all these references from, and also using NUnit, pulling all these references using NuGet. So when we look at those, we can see that we're mocking out the iSimple order view model. We pull up a catalog controller. In this case, we're going after configure, where it's using the function. So we're actually saying we're handing to the catalog controller a func that's going to return our view model object. And you can see I'm doing an assertion here to say I want to make sure that this data load order ID is coming through. And as long as that test runs successfully, it is. And then we see we're going to configure the result and return it back as a view result. We're going to make sure that it comes back and that the model was actually handed back. When we go in and we save the order, we're also creating a mock, making sure that save was called, and then we're making sure here I'm doing an assert fail. So if anything called into this closure, handing it an order ID, it's going to fail. It's because this is a case when we save the order where we're being bound from the page and not through the func calling out. So we're making sure that stays true. And then we call into the configure and we're making sure that all of the expectations are verified and that we're redirecting to a route result as a part of that. And so if we go ahead and we run our code, run our unit tests, then we can see that that everything is passing in green. So and so that in turn, try this again. I have a build error. It thinks I have a class that's not there. That is a problem. So let's build this again and run it. There we go. And we now see that our tests have passed. And when we go back, so what that's buying us at the end of the day is to say, let's keep these actions very simple. Let's keep the number of dependencies to an absolute minimum so that our unit testing can be easily run and easily mocked. In fact, this thing is so simple it's almost a shame to unit test it, because the number of actions you're actually unit testing is almost trivial. The configure one is a separate case, but that's that. So the next thing, now that we've gone through the IOC model binder, the next thing that I'll show you is the actual running of a couple of the drop-downs, and these are some fun with the binding in MVC3, or the IOC support in MVC3. Kind of took this to the nth level. And typically when we store values for a select list, or a drop list, we try to put them into the view data dictionary, and then we render them on the page inside of the display setup. And in particular, when we look at our catalog, when we add to the order, we'll see the results here. And now you can see we've got our drop list here. So what does that mean? Where we typically say inside of our controller, let's bind these up, get them running. I've always wanted to actually have the ability to inject a view data dictionary into the page or into the view model so that the controller has no idea of handling that in particular. It shouldn't. It's a view concern. However, this mechanism, pulled this out into the views themselves and rendered them as an extension. And if you look at the extension that's being built out, how it renders in the page is under the editor templates, kitchen share, you'll see that we're doing a drop-down list for, and expressly saying here's the wood type that we want to vary it around. So if we drop into here, go to the definition, we see a couple things going on in this extension that are all building out the list, and actually it's within the next piece where we're actually building the list, keeping things separated from a responsibility standpoint. We're pulling up the render list here, where actually you'll see the code that we would normally put in our page. We're doing this just through a quick link query. We're checking our styles, which are being pulled in here. We're creating our select list item with the ID, the description, and then the selected flag to say which item should actually be selected. So some quick localization. So what in the world is going on here? Let me show you. I'm going to stop the execution of this, and let's jump into the code that's being shown here. So if you look at the domain in particular, the domain has style inventory. So here we have the definition of wood type, upholstery type, and base type. So base type, oddly named, but it's a style type. And this is the base of a table. Sometimes you have a pedestal table that has one large section in the middle. Sometimes you have four legs, different styles like that. So, but what you'll notice is that it derives from style type. Now, style type has a description, and it also has an ID by virtue of iDocument model. So by virtue of those, we can store them in the database because it derives from iDocument model or stores it in under Raven. And do that quite easily. Now when we look at style list, it derives from the style renderer, and in particular we had to do this separation because dealing with this this type, this static type, got a little awkward when we started using it on the render function. So this helps pull it together, but this is really key here for the identification from an IOC standpoint. So we want an enumeration of those styles, whatever that style may be. When we come in and we instantiate, we want to get a list of all those styles, so put them into here. And then finally, we're going to render that style list based on an ID. We're going to be given an ID so that we know which one to select in the list. And that's really the heart of it. Now, where this becomes interesting is when we go to the usage of this and we see that we want to take a look at our registration. So under registrations, we see that we're registering a generic. And in particular, we're saying that's using the we could register a style list of type, base type, style list of upholstery type, and style list of wood type, but this gives us the single registration here. Single instance is telling us that for the course of the application, we're only going to have one instance of each style list that goes along with it. Now, this is probably an oversimplification. You could drop this down to on a per dependency, per request basis, but those may not be performant enough when you're talking about a lot of static lists. So you may want to look at a different refactor of this, where you would have a sort of either the container or a wrapper on the container that's actually cached, and you can introduce some caching mechanics into your IOC container. So you could say, okay, every day at noon and midnight, I'm going to effectively invalidate what's in the cache, and the next time a new data load will come out of the database. So one way to approach it. So lots of abilities is just one way that I took this. So now when I go in and I render on my page, all I need on my chair object is drop down list for the ID and then handing in the wood type. Likewise, for the upholstery ID, handing in the upholstery type. So that's really the heart of it. So this code is giving us the ability to work with that. As you look at the overall application domain, has a lot of our objects that we're using, or that the objects that we're using to hold our data. In addition, we're seeing the extensions. This contains the drop-down extension. And it also has the IOC extensions for our registration of view models, in particular the view models that are implemented off of the controller and interact directly with the controller. We then have the IOC model binder, so this is the default model binder that's sitting here. In addition, we have, to recap, let's step back. We'll go back to our global ASAX. We can see that we have our derived type bundle cache, binder cache wire up. So this is giving us the variants of types and also telling MVC about them. We then take a look at the individual views, kitchen chair and kitchen table, and we can see that we're model binding, that we're using the derived type model binding, we're doing a timestamp here, and we're doing it also on the table. So that's the heart of it. And I think a number of the questions revolved around how the model binding is set up. I think we've addressed that here. There are also some questions as far as where the code is located. So this will be placed out on the MVC contrib, a package of this. I also have it located out on Bitbucket, and out on Bitbucket under my MVCconf2 directory, it's all set to go. So if you have any questions on this, feel free to pull it here from either source. And once again, let me put up my information here, so that you can see that. So again, my email address, my Twitter address. Let me know if you have any questions. So I hope you find it useful. There is also, I should point out, out on CodePlex, if you go to MVC contrib CodePlex, and we drop into the documentation, you will see that there is a derived type model binder code bit here that walks through the implementation. Also under MVC contrib in the source code, you're going to see the sample application. So if we were to browse the source, it's under the MVC contrib sample apps, and you'll find everything there. So gives you a good idea on MVC contrib samples UI, I believe, under where did we have that? It was under binders, controllers. Oh, here we go. Derived type model binder controller. So there's a controller derived dedicated to that. And customer info. This one does not include the model binding that's being done, the view model binding that's being done off of the controller. So this is specific to this presentation, but that gives you an idea of that code there. So if you have any questions, let me know, and thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it.